You have reached every little thing. Hair, 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 hair. Hair is life.
Or I'm wondering who invented the elastic hair tie.
Hello.
Hey, Kate. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi.
Are you like a hair is life kind of person?
I mean, I'm emotionally attached to my hair.
Like you have that tattooed on you or no?
No, for sure not. Mm-mm. No.
But you would say hair is everything.
I mean, hair is a lot of things.
That's good enough.
Okay. That's as far as you can take me here, Flora. It's a lot of things. But I do feel like my identity is threatened when it doesn't go well.
What do you mean? Give me an example.
The number of times that I've walked into my stylist and said, I want it shorter, but still long enough to put on top of my head. And then they get chatty and they get creative. And then by the time I leave, I cannot fit my hair on top of my head. And I end up having to wear low ponies like a founding father for God knows how long until it grows back out. And it's not my style. I can't do it. So I've committed, at least for the next very long period of my life, to have long hair, which means I live in ponytail holder, hair tie, elastic land.
It's essential.
It is. They are in my nightstand. They are in my bathroom, in my purse, in my car, in my diaper bag. It's distressing when I find myself without one.
Okay, tell me about that. Paint me a picture of a time when you've been without a hair tie.
Like windy days and the absence of hair ties are just a recipe for frustration. Anything with a collar. I don't know if you get the rat's nest at the base of your neck, but I do, and that's bad. Sometimes I've even been bold enough to just ask a stranger. I mean, if you've ever been in that situation as a woman where you're like, please tell me you have a hair tie, and you're willing to risk whatever lice or things could be on there just to get your hair out of your face. I've been there before.
Oh my God, that's so true. It's like the other version of asking for a tampon.
It totally is.
It's the same thing where you're like, the sisterhood will understand.
Totally, they will. It's a unifying thing, needing to get our hair out of our faces. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different varieties, too. Like, I like the Sunsi, or however you say it, those kind.
What do you want to know today?
Like, where did they come from? And when? Also, who? Like, I feel like as a woman, I want to give credit to, like, that one person that really changed our lives with the hair tie.
Kate, we have just the person to help with your question.
Hi, Kate.
This is Janet Stevens.
Hi, Janet.
She's what you might call a double threat. She's both a professional hairstylist and has published in archaeology journals.
Whoa.
But I tend to not want to go anywhere I can't wear red stilettos. So I do not dig.
Instead of digging, Janet does experiments. Her specialty is recreating ancient hairstyles using only the tools that would have been found at the time.
Say, when I'm dealing with ancient Roman hairdressing, I never use a blow dryer because electricity didn't exist. I mean, that's probably the most obvious example.
And she got into doing ancient do's after coming across a pre-hair tie history mystery. Janet was at a museum, and she spotted a captivating hairstyle on a Roman statue.
The one I fell in love with was Empress Julia Domna. She has this incredibly voluminous, practically basketball-sized, wavy hair that surrounds her face. But on the back is this double-braided serpentine flat bun. And along the sides of her face are these two rope braids. And they were just so cool. I thought, well, you know, I'm a hairdresser. This might be a nice bridal hairstyle.
So Janet, with her decades of experience and her hairstyling arsenal, tried to recreate the Empress's impressive tresses.
How'd it go?
I failed dismally. Modern tools couldn't hold it together without making it so deformed and heavy and painful. And so it drove me crazy. And I just went down a rat hole of research.
So Janet was deep in the rat hole. The Empress's bun was eating at her when she looked at this stitched rag rug and she had an aha.
Did they sew her hair together?
You guessed it.
That's how they held their hair up like that?
Yeah. Well, you would have these big, long, fat bone needles usually. And then you'd just start stitching the thread into the hair. And it works actually very well. It allows you to do hairstyles that rise up into the air. They seem almost physically impossible to do.
So that's like the kind of stuff that Janet does.
It's like reverse engineering old hairstyles. That's crazy cool.
Okay, let's get to your question. Who do we have to thank for the almighty hair tie?
I think that is a wonderful question.
The problem is there's no easy answer.
There is not.
It's a tangled tale. Here's what we do know. Since there's been hair, people have been tying it back. Pre-ouchless black elastics, mm-hmm. What do you think people used?
I mean, we've all seen Pride and Prejudice, right? Like, they use ribbons, whatever.
Exactly. Leather, ribbon, string. People used whatever they had.
Yeah.
Until the 1800s, when a breakthrough technology changed the backs of heads forever. Any guesses?
Well, it probably wasn't the banana clip. We all survived that, and it didn't stick around.
It was rubber.
Oh, like just the material, you mean?
Yeah, with rubber comes elastic, and that paved the way for the elastic hair tie. The first patent in America comes from Massachusetts resident Benjamin P. Ryder.
He was issued a patent in May 1882 for a loop of elastic fabric with a clamp on the tips that had three hooks, like a grappling hook.
Okay.
Should we send you a picture?
Yeah, can you? Because I'm trying to imagine the grappling hook aspect of it.
We'll put this little piece of hair tie history on our Instagram at ELT Show, and you can see it right now on our Spotify page.
Okay, it's coming through. Oh, I see. Like it comes to a point.
Yeah, it's like a lasso that has a tiny grappling hook where the loop meets.
Okay. And then were you supposed to, like, catch it on the hook parts?
I think you wouldn't actually put your hair through the hole. You would use the hooks to fasten.
Oh, go around.
Yes.
And he called it the hair fastener. That's what it's called.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that seems, I feel like there's a hole right there. You could have figured that out, but I mean, I wasn't there, so.
I think it was an interesting solution, but not necessarily a good invention, because if you lose control of that hook while you're wrapping, it could snap back on you like a slingshot and cut your fingers.
So over the next 100 years, many inventors built on Ryder's idea. We got the metal clasped elastic, the hair tie with the plastic balls, mm-hmm. and finally the sleek black elastic circle. But it took a big hairy village. Janet says there's not one single person to thank.
I can only give credit to the collective imagination and ingenuity of people pissed off at their hair.
Everyone had to do their part.
I mean, it's like a communal answer in a way, which I guess is inspiring. But also, I really feel like someone should get a high five for that. That's solid work that they did for the rest of us.
Well, there is someone we can give a high five to. Not the inventor of the black elastic hair tie, but the inventor of the charismatic megafauna of hair ties. The Eiffel Tower of hair ties. The Rihanna of hair ties. The hair tie that reimagined what hair ties could be. When other hair ties were trying to make themselves small, invisible, receding into the background of heads, This hair tie wasn't afraid to take up space. With its frilled fabric and bold patterns, it said, yeah, I'm a hair tie.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm more than a hair tie. I'm also a bodacious ankle accessory.
We're talking about the scrunchie, right?
Yes.
Which is making a comeback.
Oh, I read the think pieces on Jason Momoa's pink velvet scrunchie.
My daughter gave her scrunchie to a boy that she likes, and he wears it on his wrist every day. I saw him in the cafeteria last week.
Were you like, that's my daughter's scrunchie. We need that for her hair.
She got 50 for Christmas, so I think she can probably spare a couple.
Do you agree with me that this is like the most iconic hair tie there is?
I think so. There was like a solid culture that came with a scrunchie. Big bangs and clear telephones and tied up t-shirts and a lot of unfortunate denim. And that's what I'm remembering.
So Kate, I want to introduce you to the person you should be high-fiving.
Okay.
The woman who dreamed up this celebrated hair tie.
I invented it with my own two hands in 1986.
This is Rami Revson. And we're going to hear the story of her business badassery after the break.
When my father looked at it, put it in his hand, I'll never forget it. He said, honey doll, I think you've got something there. And with that, I was not going to give up.
Okay, Kate, settle in, let your hair down, because we are about to tell you the tale of the heroine of hair tie history.
I'm here for this.
It's 1986. Papa Don't Preach is on the radio. Pretty in Pink is in theaters. Jason Momoa is celebrating his 7th birthday. And Rami Revson, the protagonist of our story, is singing at nightclubs in Greenwich Village.
I did shows with Peter Allen, Phoebe Snow. I was at the Bottom Line, Bitter End, Reno Sweeney's, and different nightclub places in New York.
That sounds very glamorous to me.
It was. It was fun. I met two husbands from the audience there.
So let's get to Rami's hair, because her locks are key to the story.
I had very long blonde hair. It was my calling card. And I would come on stage with my hair up, and then I'd sing a couple songs, and then I'd sit on a stool, and I'd have like a pin light on me, and I would take my hair down by just pulling very slowly this tortoise ring hair accessory.
Very dramatic.
So dramatic. The problem was, it ended with Rami singing the rest of her set while holding a tortoiseshell hair accessory in her hand.
That sounds a little bulky, a little clumsy.
So I really wanted something like fabric, something soft, so that when I took it off, I could put it on my wrist.
So she searched high and low for a hair accessory like this. She went to department stores, she asked clerks, but it turned out the answer was right beneath her belly button.
I was walking up the stairs to my bedroom, and I was taking my pants off, and I had an elasticized waistband. And I said, you know what? That puckery waist. I'm going to try to mimic that for my hair. That elastic waist was the clue.
Now I'm just envisioning all scrunchies as tiny waistbands for your hair, and it makes perfect sense.
So Rami buys fabric and a used sewing machine for $60, and she takes up sewing.
I knew if I could get from my head to my fingers what I had in my mind, I was set.
And that's when her second flash of insight hit.
So as I was making it, I had this little dog. Her name was the Skunch, which wasn't a nice name. She was ratty-looking little orange poodle. And she was annoying. She kept yapping all the while I'm making this product. And I said, Skunch, stop it. Skunchy, Skunchy, will you stop? Skunchy. Ah, that's the name of the product. Because I knew when a woman walks in a store, she can't walk in the store and say, do you have that fabric with the elastic in the middle to put on a ponytail? No. She had to say, do you have what?
Mm-hmm.
Skunchy. That's the name.
Is that the brand that I can't say that I was saying Soonsy?
Yep.
Okay. This is all coming together. Okay. Skunchy.
This is how it all started.
This is crazy. And she's right. You can't say I need a waistband for my hair. That's the. It's perfect. It's perfect.
So Rami has a prototype. She has the name. Then she needed to do some market research.
I made about 5 or 6 of them on my own. And I went to a place called Candy Kitchen. It's an ice cream parlor where everybody goes in the Hamptons. And I sat at a little table there. And as women would come in with their children, I'd say, do me a favor. Would you please try this on? And they'd try it on. I said, oh, I love it. Where can I get it? I said, you can't yet, but I said, next year you'll be wearing this. You'll have a lot of these.
So you thought you had a hit? You were like, this is going to be big.
I knew it. No, I absolutely knew what I had. I promise you. And I said, next year I'm buying myself a beach house.
I want that confidence about like anything in my life.
I know. So Rami said she applied for a patent and started shopping the Skunchy around to all the big hair brands. You want to guess what happened?
Well, clearly it was a hit at some point.
Not at first.
Oh, of course not.
Every single one of them laughed at me. They told me it was stupid. No women would never like them. They told me the name was ridiculous. It sounded like something you scrub your bathroom with.
Rami remembers one guy in particular.
He said like this to my face. He said, isn't it pathetic what divorced women do to get money?
Oh, my God.
And he hurt me so bad. So every time I did that, I went home and cried. But I got up the next day and went to the next place.
What kept you going?
I have no idea. I knew it was going to be a big hit. And I'll tell you why. I told my parents to come out and I had something that I was going to take care of them forever. I said, oh, well, let's go see. So my parents come out. My father was a man of very little words. He wasn't like me, like, wow, it's great. No, but my father looked at it, put it in his hand. I'll never forget it. He said, honey doll, I think you've got something there. And with that, I was not going to give up.
She held on like a good scrunchie would.
Yes, and it wasn't just the doubters. Rami said that some of these companies that rejected her, they turned around and stole the idea. They started making their own.
Everybody was making it. Nobody was paying me. I couldn't afford it. I'll never forget, I went to the store. I wanted to buy a $3.50 chicken. And I didn't have the money. And everybody's selling scrunchies. I'm looking outside on the newsstands in New York. They're hanging from strings, scrunchies. I'm walking down the street. I can't buy a chicken.
So Rami's determined to make money from her invention. And there's really only one way for her to do that. She forms partnerships with lawyers and marketers, and together they embark on that great American business journey. They start suing the living shit out of people, or threatening to.
We went to, let's say, Walmart's, and we said, we could sue you, and you get treble damages if I win. Oh, your patent's not worth the paper it's written on. Yeah, you could be right, but if you lose, you'll owe this woman $70 million.
And it worked. Walmart made a deal to sell only Rami scrunchies. Then Rami and her lawyers said to the other retailers, oh, look, Walmart settled. And it went on from there.
Then companies all started calling me saying, how can I get a license? So that's how we started doing it.
That's diabolical and brilliant. I love her for that.
Rami says she got 10% of every sale, and she said she made millions.
Wow.
Don't you know, the next year, I did get a beach house right on the ocean, and I walk into that ice cream parlor, and all the girls were wearing my scrunchies. And then they had an article about me, and they had it up on the wall. How do you think I felt?
How did you feel?
Oh, I was like crazy.
Do you remember the first time you saw someone, like a famous person, wearing one?
Yes, Jackie Kennedy. Yeah, in Sag Harbor. Just got off a boat. I went up to her, and I said, I've really made it now. She looked at me and I said, I'm so excited that you're wearing a scrunchie. And she said, why, I love them. I couldn't live without them. I said, I invented them. She goes, oh, dear girl. And she gave me a hug.
In 2005, Conair bought the scrunchie brand. Their tagline is scrunchie, the original scrunchie.
Yes. Where did the R come from?
Rami says she's not sure exactly how that transformation happened, but it makes sense. Scrunchie sounds like scrunchie. It scrunches. And maybe no one else could pronounce scrunchie. I don't know.
So people got nicer to her, right? Like, is she like a respected hair revolutionist now?
I asked her about that. Did any of those people who rejected it come back and say, I'm sorry?
Yes, the most wonderful thing. I was at the Breakers Hotel at the pool in Palm Beach.
And Rami says that the guy who said it was amazing what divorcees will do for money, he was there and he came up to her.
And said to me, darling, he has an accent, I am so proud of you. He said, is your family proud of you? I said, yes. He said, what you did, he said, was remarkable. And he said, I wish I had listened to you in the first place. I would have made millions and millions of dollars. I'm sorry.
What did you say to him?
He made me cry. I hugged him.
Mm-hmm.
I stood my ground. I sued them. I won. And then I took them all out to dinner. And when the bill came, I paid the bill.
I like her. This is very like an American dream kind of story, right? Like, couldn't buy a chicken to now being this woman who's influenced generations of women. I love it.
Maybe hair is everything.
It's a lot of things, Flora. I'll go that far. It's a lot of things.
If you have a question you can't find an answer to, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka, Doug Barron, Madeline Fox, Jeff Whittington, and Selena C. Reynolds. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored and mixed by Dara Hirsch. Messy hair, don't care. Goodbye.